How many women have you serviced since you've opened?
Oh, we've in terms of hotline, we've served well over about 200.
I'd say more. I'd definitely say more. Those phones are always going.
Oh, the phone. Yeah, the phones are constantly going. I think about counseling, I would probably.
I think it's 150 to 200 now.
BAI, you're on the air. Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Is this WBAI?
Yes, it is.
Oh, I tuned in late to your show, but I was very interested. You keep on talking about shelters and opening up lots of shelters, and it seems to me that there will be so many shelters, but are there other ways that you're dealing with solving this problem? I mean, it's such a phenomenal problem. We can't put every woman in a shelter. Is there anybody could respond to that?
Okay. Laura?
Well, there are counseling services available. You can call our hotline number that we gave you before for the Center for the Elimination of Violence in the Family. And Yolanda has the number right here. It's 237-1658. And you can get all sorts of referrals there. Counseling, legal services, any, whatever you need.
I think I was trying to ask another question. I think that besides shelters, like all of you expressed the need that women needed these kinds of shelters, but one of the things that really concerns me is that we can't keep on putting women in shelters. I mean, aren't there any kinds of social actions or things that we can do to prevent this kind of violence outside of removing the women from our home?
Well, one of the things we're trying to do now is get in direct contact with the police, if that's what you're referring to.
No, I was referring to why don't men, be put in jail instead of women having to leave their homes and families and being displaced in a way where men seem to be able to stay in the apartments and just be there.
Well, there have been instances where the husband has been put out of the house by the police once the order of protection and he's kicked out of the house, the apartment and all. But majority of time it is the women who's just upped and left.
We don't like taking the woman out of her house. It's a real hardship for the woman. However, it's very, very difficult to evict a man from his home when he hasn't been convicted. And as we mentioned before, it's very difficult to get an arrest. In one case, we did a tremendous amount of women's groups went to help a woman whose husband had beaten her for 14 years, and her husband was arrested and supposedly sentenced to 3 years. 8 months later, he's being let out on parole. So we expect to make that long-term effort, but in the meantime, we're saving women's lives by providing shelter.
Also, the majority of the time when the husband is caring for the house, the upkeep for the house, and he's the sole provider of the house, he is legally entitled to the apartment. The woman who hasn't been working or anything, well, she has to up and leave.
Wow.
It's sad, yes.
It is sad.
Yes.
Because, it seems that the men should be in jail rather than the woman, having to leave.
Yeah, and going through all the changes that she has to deal with. Right, you're right.
Been through enough changes.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. It's really good show.
Thank you
bye
for calling.
Bye.
Good night.
A lot of questions.
She's really right, though. I mean, why should the woman leave? You know, why should it have to be the woman? You know?
I agree. And we should, you know, women, you could tell them it's not fair for you to leave. However, right. If you're shorter and smaller and, you know, mm-hmm. you've been trained all your life to be passive and submissive and you can't fight that man in the middle of the night, then for your protection, we'd have shelters.
BAI, you're on the air. Hello?
BAI?
Yes.
A little louder.
Yes.
Hello?
Yes, we're here.
Yeah, I want to respond to that first question. I guess I see the shelters that seem to be cropping up as a kind of a first step in an evolutionary process. Shelters being the first step in more or less re-education and re-educating women in terms of power following that, so that eventually shelters won't be necessary. I also want to say that I feel really good about tonight's show, that I support your struggle, and I really like the work that you're doing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes? I also agree very strongly with you when you said that the shelters must be run for women, by women. I think that's really crucial, and I think it's got to stay in the community, and that it's got to be women-controlled. And the last thing that I wanted to ask you was, I'd like very much to volunteer, but I'm terrified. And is there any training involved? How do I go about it? And what's the training what's involved in the training, and who do I call to do that?
Well, you call our shelter number, and we have a 6-week training session provided for volunteers, and the groups are small, a group of about 20, and it's very collectively run, and people get to know each other, and it covers all of the legal aspects and the health aspects and the family court aspects and that kind of thing, and we'll be starting up the training sessions periodically.
Okay, that sounds real good. Thank you very much.
Thank good you night. For calling. What training programs do you have available for the volunteers? Is it an ongoing process?
Well, we'll be doing, they're 6-week training sessions, and we will start them over and over again depending on how many volunteers that we have.
How many volunteers have you had so far come through the shelter, go through the training?
Oh, we've probably had about 80.
Do they all volunteer their services at the shelter, or do they go out into the different systems?
It depends. Oftentimes they volunteer at the shelter to sort of get a feeling of what's going on there and to develop their skills, but you can also take on a specific job and even do it from your home if it's something that is, you know, paperwork or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Are there staff available at the shelter on weekends if someone were to call your hotline number, would somebody be available for them?
Well, we're hoping to have the hotline number be 24 hours, 7 days a week. However, it is not currently that we're not able to cover it that much. As we get more and more trained volunteers, mm-hmm. we'll be able to expand the services. Oftentimes, shortly, we'll be able to provide.
So those volunteers are really essential to the operation of the shelter. I see. What? Okay. BAI, you're on the air.
Yes, I'd like to respond to a question that was asked a few minutes ago.
Yes.
Well, the woman was speaking about, she wanted to know why women had to be put into shelters. And I think that she, maybe a number of other people, also lack knowledge or understanding of that problem. It's not a question of being taken away from home. It's a matter of running for your life.
Right.
And I just wanted to say that for the benefit of those individuals who do not know what it's like to be beaten up by your husband or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes. That's true. Thank
Very
you.
Very good point.
Mm-hmm. Hello?
Well.
Yes.
Yes, I wanted to respond to... Who am I speaking to?
This is Rosemary Reed.
Oh, I was trying to respond to a question that was asked a few minutes ago. By the woman that was saying she wanted to know why women were taken from their homes and put into shelters, that there must be another solution to the problem. And I think that she and maybe perhaps many other people misunderstand or don't understand the full problem, that it's not a question of being taken away from home, but it's a matter of running for your life. We could change the rules, we could change the laws, but that takes time. But it's a question of, trying to save your life.
Yes, that's very true. And I think that Laura and Diane have expressed that at the show. Thank you.
You're welcome.
The woman who was just on the phone talked about laws. And Yolanda, you told us about one law that was changed about family court. The spouse can now decide to take her case from family court to criminal court if she so chooses. Are there any other legislation coming up, any other laws that you know of?
Well, there's legislation that shows that if a woman left her spouse in the middle of the night, she could be accused of abandonment, and that law has been changed.
Mm-hmm. Any others that you know of that are coming up?
Plus, we were talking about the economical, with the husband having the lease in his name and paying for everything in the house, that he was legally had the right to that apartment if he was a sole provider.
Laura, you said that you were on welfare. How were you supporting yourself before you came down?
My husband was receiving welfare because he was unemployed. It was under his name, so when we came down here, everything was more or less done over again. Mm-hmm. So I had to start from the bottom anyway, as far as welfare.
What about your situation, Diane, at that time?
Well, my husband was, as I said before, my husband was really like the sole supporter of the family. I wasn't working at all. I've had work before, but during the time when I was going through my crisis, I was unemployed and I wasn't working at all.
And are you working now, or?
Yes. Since then, I've come a long way, and I keep thanking the National Congress of Neighborhood Women for really prompting me to be the kind of woman that I know that I can be. Since then, I've went back to school, and I'm presently holding a full-time job now, and I'm much happier, and my children I know are much happier.
Is there any connection between the National Congress of Neighborhood Women and this and the Battered Women's Shelter?
Yes. It's a history that happened a couple of years ago that's finally a reality now. The National Congress of Neighborhood Women and the Brooklyn YWCA are the sponsors of the Center for the Elimination of Violence in the Family. And maybe Yolanda could tell you a little bit more about the, how that came about.
Well, many of us, we have a 32-member board, and many of us are women who've been working in women's issues for many years, and all of us have phone numbers of one sort or another that were constantly being used by battered women to ask for help again and again. And so the phone numbers that we set up for different kind of administrative business were besieged by requests for help. So lots of us got together. I was aware of a house that became available, and so I called in Jan Peterson from National Congress of Neighborhood Women, and she called in other women, many of whom were battered women, but some of them were MSW, some were lawyers, some were PhDs, some were, average, were women from the community. And the sponsoring groups were National Congress of Neighborhood Women and the Brooklyn YWCA and some members of the Mayor's Task Force on Rape. And before you knew it, there was so much support for this project that we had 32 very, very committed member board. We created the center and were incorporated in March.
One of the reasons also why the National Congress of Neighborhood Women got involved into the issue is that they found that many women on the staff were also going through the situations of being battered, and they felt that that was initial place like to have a start. If it's happened here in our own backyard, how many more women all over the country are going through the whole thing? Mm-hmm. And that's when they decided to take a move.
That number to call again is area code 212-371-5200. About the staff themselves, how did the staff get involved in the program? I know you said it's run on a collective, but are any of the women on the staff themselves battered women?
Yes. Many of us have a history of working within the women's movement, and I personally have experiences of violence in my family. As I've mentioned several times before, my father was a bouncer in a bar, and a man was 260 pounds, and he, never learned to speak the language very well. He was a Hungarian immigrant, and he just, hit first and pretend he couldn't hear later. And it was a very, violent situation in my home, and my mother hated and feared him and didn't know how to respond to him. And the only thing that she could do was to teach my sister and I sort of fear. And she would say that men are no good, men are bums, they're lousy, they drink, they smell. And then when I became 18, they asked me to marry one. And that really put up a real double bind for me. It was, in a way, saying that men are no good. And on the other hand, we were trained to need men for support. And I think it's ironic because I'm 6'1½", and I was trained all my life to relate to men who are taller, older, richer, wiser, more socially and politically powerful. And it's kind of training women to be victims. It's like to deny the strength that you have, to deny your own creativity, and to look for someone else to support you. And as long as you've got that kind of double message that's coming at you all the time, you can't feel very good about yourself. And I still see women doing that and learning that all the time.
Someone before mentioned that you were doing research, and what kind of research are you going to be doing? Is this going to go out on a national basis?
Yeah, we expect to become a national research institute, and we're researching, what are the characteristics of battered women and what family situations might, surround the issue of battery, what happens with a child who's battered, and we want to document once and for all that it's a massive problem that touches every member of society and not just a few.
Mm-hmm. BAI, you're on the air.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes, I have some questions that I would like to ask.
Surely.
And also some statements that I would like to make.
Surely.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Do I just hold on?
No, go ahead.
Oh, okay. First of all, I think that the first time that this occurs in a family would probably be the best time to leave, because if it happens once, it just will constantly reoccur. Also,
I just wonder how much of this starts before a person gets married. And also, I'm wondering how many of these men are alcoholics. And I also think that the situation, as far as men are concerned, is to be very strong. And as far as women are to be concerned, they take the part of being the meek person. And I think this also has a lot to do with it. And I think that once you're out of this situation is the only time that you can really see how insane the whole thing really is.
Yes, I'd just like to respond to what you said, and so far as this issue being related to alcoholism, I think that alcoholism, like drug abuse and just a man's own inability or a man's desire to assert his masculinity, I think that these are all just causes and useless excuses. I mean, they all contribute to the battery itself, but I don't think that the implication that alcoholism or how it relates to this. In fact, I think that there's really, for a lot of men, alcohol is an excuse. I mean, they get drunk to beat their wives. Mm-hmm. And to tie it really in with the problem of battered women, I think it's true, but yet, if we look at it from that angle, then when money starts coming in for the woman, it'll never get down to the woman who really actually needs it, the battered woman herself. More women would be spent for treatment of alcoholism, and the woman that really is going through these beatings because of drunken men really will not get the type of monies and services that they need.
I see. Well, I'm not saying that most of these men are alcoholics. I just wonder how many of them are. I don't think that you need to be an alcoholic to be that type of a person, because I know of quite a few of them. You know, I have friends of mine, you know, and it's really amazing. I mean, I just don't understand the whole situation, but I really don't know, you know, exactly what could be done about it.
Well, a great percentage of these men are heavy drinkers. Mm-hmm. But like Diane said before, the facts are there.
Uh-huh. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. How do you feel about that, Yolanda? About the alcoholism?
Oh, well, as a researcher once told me an anecdote, a man had said that he beat his wife because he couldn't help himself. He was drunk and he wasn't responsible for his feelings. And so the researcher said to this man, well, you know, if you were totally irresponsible and you didn't know what you were doing, why didn't you kill her? And he said, oh, no, I couldn't do that. And the man was cognizant enough to realize that he couldn't kill his wife and that would be unacceptable. However, he could beat her bloody and try to strangle her. And I think that, again, shows that, you know, there's a certain amount of tolerance of violence in the family, and men know they can get away with this, and they know that women are going to be the unsuspecting scapegoats of it, and so that's why it happens, not just the alcoholism. However, alcoholism is tied up with all kinds of other crimes, and so, you know, there's a connection, but it's not the causal factor, or the research will tell in the future what the answer is to that.
Is the Center for Elimination of Violence in the Family, do they have an extensive research component built into this project?
Yes, we have a 4-person research team, and we have one staff member on hand who does the research, and other people who work along with her, and all of these questions are going to be answered there. It's a very, very comprehensive questionnaire asking all sorts of questions about battery, and we hope to come up with these kinds of answers.
Mm-hmm. We'll also have in not only battered women, but incest and child abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. BAI, you're on the air. Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Is WBAI?
Yes, it is. Oh,
okay.
Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes, go right ahead.
Yes, I wanted to ask, in your counseling, how much of the reason for women staying with their husbands have you seen to have to do with their seeing the man as someone with a problem, say an alcoholic or someone who can't deal with his feelings, and how big a contributing factor this is in the kiss and make up syndrome that the police are so fond of talking about?
Well, there are a lot of women who've been trained to feel sorry for everybody under the sun except themselves, and will feel sorry for, you know, just anybody, and, you know, continue to allow themselves to be victimized by this kind of situation. But There are many other reasons why women stay at home. It's not just feeling sorry for the man. There are all these kind of cultural stigmas which say that a woman must have that each child must have a two-person home, no matter how violent one of the people is. And we had a really extreme case where a woman stayed in this marriage for 15 years because she felt that there had to be a two-person home. Her husband was violent to herself and her children the entire time. Well, her 15-year-old son finally commits suicide out of despondency. And we think it's really, really important that that a child has a supportive environment. It doesn't matter whether there are two parents or one, as long as they're supportive, and that keeping a violent father in the home is not the solution to bringing up children.
Does that answer your question?
Yes. I would also think then, developing from that, my next question is, are you going to have an outreach program in the community that will deal with helping women strengthen their self-image and to combat those cultural myths that are holding women in thrall?
Absolutely. We have a community outreach program, and as a matter of fact, we need volunteers with that, too. We're working through the churches. We're working through the community council, the community planning board, every kind of community group, the civic organizations, women's organizations. We've been asked to speak all over the place, and we've filled as many requests as we can. However, we're going to have to train other speakers because we have far more requests for speakers than we can possibly fill.
Do you feel that this problem is a reflection of a general societal bias toward approval of violence?
Yes, I think that there's tremendous amount of violence in the media, and that, from cartoons up to movies to every single television show, there's so much violence in all of them, and it's used as the gratuitous theme of many movies. I mean, you just come to a movie to see violence, and you sort of lose the storyline entirely. You're just coming to see a woman be maimed and cut up and, stuffed into a coffin or something like that. And as long as violence is considered to be such a major part of American life, I think that it contributes to battery. The horrendous part is that women are usually the victims of this violence and children, and I think that's outrageous. And I think that women should boycott any kind of media that shows women and children as willing victims of violence, and never pay to see a movie like that, because I feel if you pay your $4 to see a movie like that, you're voting against yourself.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, and as the mother of a son interested in making sure my son doesn't perpetuate these mores, I really thank you for the work you're doing.
Thank you for calling.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We're right within the shelter, will you be having any kind of support groups or consciousness-raising groups for the women?
Well, we do have all of the time evening rap sessions, and we have weekly support groups, and we hope to have organized consciousness-raising groups in the community, so women who've never, ever been in touch with the women's movement before will have something to turn to even before they come into the shelter, or maybe so they won't have to come into the shelter.
What problems do you anticipate once the main shelter has been opened?
Well, second stage housing will probably be a problem. Getting women, we can only accommodate 40 women, and it's a massive problem. So we're going to have to figure out a way to have. In England, there women have been working on this issue before us, and there are 75 battered women's shelters in England and 100 battered women's programs. And one of the major needs has been second stage housing, where women go together to this housing with their children, and they provide support, follow-up support for each other. Follow-up counseling and that kind of thing is going to be essential. We're doing one step at a time, though. It's very difficult to deal with all issues at once.
One thing, too, that I'd like to mention that hasn't been mentioned here today was that a lot of women can't relate directly to physical violence against them. But I know a friend that once said to me, well, my husband never beat me, but I know, and I've seen several times when women were in situations where they wanted to say things and they've lowered their voices, and when they were up against men, when a man was, getting angry in the midst of an argument, women have lowered their voices and tried to just hold back things that they really would say. And I felt very strongly that the threat of violence was in the air. And I think that while women can't identify with physical violence, I know that a lot of women can really identify with psychological battery, where they're not saying things that they want to say and calming down when the man gets aroused or trying to bring his voice down. I think that while women that can't relate to physical violence, they'll be able to more. I know a lot of women that would say, hey, you know, that's really true. I've never been beat, but I know there's been times when I've ran up in a man's face and I've had an argument with a man and he looked like he was about to punch me and I just kind of, you know, got things really going easy between us. And mm-hmm. they really can relate yeah. to that much better.
Mm-hmm. I know so many women who are so intimidated by the potential threat of violence because they've had it in their own homes or because they've had it in the outside environment that they stay in their houses. They don't go out at night. They don't do this. They don't do that. They're literal prisoners for fear of this violence that might happen to them. And as long as we've got masses of women cowering in their homes and cowering out on the street, we're not going to have the change. We're going to have to eliminate these kinds of you can't eliminate crime in the street until you eliminate crime in the home, and it's going to take efforts on all of our parts, strengthening women's bodies and minds and support systems so that we can begin to change our own lives and stop living in fear.
Will that be one of the focus of the research component and the shelter itself?
I haven't seen that particular question. I'm sure it's probably part of it. It's something that I very strongly hope is there. Maybe it is there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Once again, that number is area code 212-371-5200. Laura, you have a different outlook now that you're out of the situation and looking forward to the future.
Oh, yeah, I've got a lot more confidence in myself now that I can make it. Like I said before, through the support that I've gotten. I feel like there's no stopping me now. You know, I've got my wheels going and There's no stopping.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you've been listening to WBAI's program, Our Cities, Our Lives. My guests have been Yolanda Baco, Diane Jackson, and Laura. And thank you all for being here. Good night.